This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 27th of April 2018. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 27th of April, which this week have been edited by Jane Thomas, Jane Pickard, and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. The main headlines this week are Churches Save Lunch Clubs, Protests over use of plastics at store, and firefighters rescue horse. So we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Churches Save Lunch Clubs, a vital lunch club service used by dozens of elderly residents, has been saved thanks to a new church partnership. St Barnabas Church in Week and Winchester Baptist Church have come together to save lunch club services in the city by forming a new organisation, Winchester Wellbeing. Following the closure of Age UK Mid Hampshire's lunch clubs at the end of March, Ed Dines and Marcus Dickinson, Vicar of St Barnabas Church and Minister of Winchester Baptist Church, respectively, stepped in to ensure elderly diners are not left without a solid meal on a Monday, Tuesday and Thursday. Carol Bailey, Pastoral Coordinator for Mission to Seniors at Winchester Baptist Church, said, Age UK came to us and said we're going to lose the lunch club. The churches have been very supportive. Could we take them on? So discussions then began between the three parties and we decided that not only was it viable, but it would be better to bring it all under one roof, and Winchester Wellbeing was born. This vital service has been made possible by the positivity and favour shown by the three parties involved, namely Age UK Mid Hampshire, St Barnabas Church and Winchester Baptist Church, who worked together tirelessly for 6 weeks to pull this off, she added. For the users of the lunch club, there will be no change For the users of the lunch club, there will be no change as all of the existing volunteers and staff have agreed to stay on. And Miss Bailey said, it's absolutely great for the seniors because they know their faces. It has been really lovely and there's been a real coming together for all parties involved. Mr. Dickinson added, the lunch clubs are a lifeline for many elderly people, providing not just a hot meal but also companionship and a change of scene. And Mr. Dines said that it was important to us that this priceless service to the community continued, and we're delighted to be involved. Dinah Joan said, I am 97, and my best days out are to the lunch clubs where I meet my friends. I was so unhappy when I thought the lunch clubs would no longer be there, and am thrilled Winchester Wellbeing is maintaining the lunch service. The lunches are held in St Barnabas Church in Week, the Baptist Church Hall in Swan Lane, the Salvation Army Hall in Parchment Street and Winnell Community Centre on Garbett Road. And the clubs also provide a Christmas lunch, talks, armchair keep fit and a chiropody service.
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Protest over use of plastics at store. 20 people supported a plastic attack protest at the Tesco superstore in Winnell to highlight the use of plastic. They did their shopping and discarded the plastic and reused containers. Milk was poured into glass bottles, cheese from plastic went into greaseproof paper, as well as fruit, veg and pasta being decanted into customers and containers. Organiser Caroline Kirkman said, today isn't about bashing supermarkets, it's about changing our buying habits to encourage supermarkets to change their use of plastics. It's not going to be an overnight thing. Supermarkets have challenges about how they store and handle food in a healthy, safe way. And we have become dependent on plastic for our convenience. But we can make choices about how we buy goods. We can make sure we understand as much as possible about recycling locally. Someone unimpressed about the protest was City MP Steve Brine, who said, "From the Prime Minister down, the government has shown huge commitment on this issue, most recently announcing our intention to ban the sale of plastic straws, drink stirrers and cotton buds. We are going to consult without delay on how we ban these items to protect our rivers and meet our ambitious environmental plan to eliminate avoidable plastic waste. We all want to get to the same place, but for me, these stunts are fundamentally the wrong approach. And contrast with Final Straw Winchester as an alternative example, which is working sensibly and in partnership with local businesses and councils. And that's why I am helping them and working closely with what is a positive campaign." And this article is accompanied by a delightful picture of a whole crowd of young people, all brightly dressed, well, all ages, actually, with trolleys full of stuff that they bought at Tesco. And they're all waving their arms and smiling. And then underneath there's a picture of single-use plastic bottles, which look as big as Daleks, really.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And this sad little story is Firefighters Rescue Horse. Firefighters rescued a horse after one of its hooves became trapped in a well or drain. Crews were called to Riverside Farm Lane in Titchbourne near Alsford amid reports that a horse was stuck on a fence. When they arrived, they discovered that one of its feet was caught in a drain or well. The Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service spokesman said the animal was released with the aid of specialist equipment after being sedated by a vet. The rescue was performed by an animal rescue unit from Winchester, a support crew from Overton, and colleagues from the retained station in Alsford. They were called out just before 6 p.m. on Friday and spent 3 hours at the scene, working into the dark. The animal was not thought to have been seriously injured, but its condition was unclear. And this is accompanied by a photo which looks far worse than that description, because in the photograph, the horse is clearly buried from saddle level down in the earth. There is no sign of anything of the horse below what you might think of as the waist, and its head is up against the fence, looking in absolute agony. And it's a very sad situation for the poor animal. I hope it did survive.
And that concludes our headline stories. We're now going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, editorial comment, first person, question and answer, my Winchester, and Belgarum diary. We'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Andrews, Michael Andrews, after a long illness, aged 86. Elton, Michael Anthony Elton, peacefully at Winchester Hospital. Hodgson, Stella Grace Ney Aurum Hodgson, aged 88 and peacefully. Masters, Ruby Jean Masters, peacefully aged 93. Scott, Phyllis Amy Ney Rebeck Scott, aged 76. Tricky, Sandra Ney Edwards Tricky, suddenly aged 70. And finally, Winning, James William Winning, peacefully aged 95. And now Jane has got Christian comment.
And Christian comment is preparing for a wedding. The dominant narrative in my household over the last 6 months has been the impending marriage of my daughter, my eldest and firstborn, a special day in this life of our family. I often say jokingly, honestly, I am joking, that I cannot wait for it all to be over. This is the first of my daughters to get married. And although I've had to think about getting all the paperwork in order and all the bills paid, I have been totally unprepared for the stress of organising and planning the wedding itself. It may seem obvious to you, but it wasn't obvious to me. I also acknowledge that as father of the bride, I have it relatively easy. Well, okay, very easy. I have been made on occasion to engage in conversations concerning flowers for the bride and bridesmaids' bouquets, flowers for the church, flowers for pedestals, etc. as well as discussions about the colour, the fitting and the shape of the dresses, seating arrangements, music, food, wine, decorations, transport, trees. Yes, trees? Fairy lights. About much of the aforesaid, I struggle to find an opinion to express. Frankly, I cannot wait for it all to be over. Sometimes, many times, I have questioned how all the things that need doing will get done. Thankfully, my wife has it all under control, and I say that without the slightest hint of irony. In John 2:1-11, Jesus too is at a wedding, and they start to run out of wine. When Jesus' mother says to him that they have no wine, he adopts the same attitude I have attempted with my daughter's wedding preparations. He says, what's it got to do with me? Mary, the mother of Jesus, doesn't seem to listen to her son, but rather indomitably tells the waiters to do whatever he says. And being the dutiful son, Jesus changes the water into wine. I'm always amazed that this is the first sign that Jesus gives to the world of his power. He knows that he can change all things, but changes water to wine, averting a rather human disaster. Running out of wine is a disaster, because his mother asks him. This is a great narrative, and it is interesting to consider the soft power that Mary is able to exert on Jesus, getting him to do something he clearly does not want to do. Jesus loves his mother and will do anything for her. We too are assured of God's love if we love Jesus, who will answer all our prayers. In Matthew chapter 7, Jesus tells all that follow him, "Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks the door will be opened." Pray to Jesus for God's grace and his compassion, and all the blessings of this world and the next will be yours. A free gift, the best wine, paradise given all because of love, all because we know Jesus. Hallelujah. Amen. And that was from the Reverend Graham Bokett, Rector, Upper Itchen Benefice.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. Now, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 17 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Political courage. Paul Twelvetree writes, "Sir, in your editorial last week, April the 19th, you rightfully highlighted my consistent stance over many years in opposing the closure of the Andover Road. However, I think you are being a little cynical in attributing motives to councillors who are now publicly supporting saving the road. When I first started to lobby councillors, nearly all of them privately supported keeping the road open. I was told that to be successful, I would have to show that circumstances had changed since the original decision had been taken, and that there was public support for a change to the plans. During the course of my campaign, I have emphasised the planned redevelopment of Sir John Moore Barracks, the expansion of Worthy Down, and the need for a large park and ride north of Winchester, all of which will increase traffic entering Winchester from the north. The almost universal public support for the Save the Andover Road campaign has shown that the public back keeping the road open. I have given the decision makers the justification to review the proposal to close the road, and the recent City of Winchester Movement strategy consultation by Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council, which is about to report, has provided the opportunity. Now, it is this, rather than political opportunism, as you imply, that has enabled the Winchester City Council administration to come out in support of my campaign at this time. I am very glad that our elected councillors have the political maturity and courage to change their minds and reconsider this appalling plan, rather than blindly continue with something that will cause traffic misery for local residents in St Barnabas. Paul Twelvetree, from the STAR, Burriton Road, Hairstock.
James Anderson is complaining about political posturing. Sir, a mixture of petrol and sugar formed into a napalm-like chemical weapon was detonated by Sinn Féin at Le Mans Hotel in Belfast in 1978. Members of the Irish Collie Dog Club attending their annual dinner dance took the brunt. The burns injuries of those who survived were terrible. One perpetrator served 20 years for the atrocity, while the others were given letters of amnesty by the Blair government. Compare that response with another in which a less nasty chemical weapon, chlorine gas, is used as a super tear gas to flush fighters out of basement bunkers in Douma. In response, Britain uses Syria as a missile range, allegedly to defend a red line. Use of serious chemical weapons such as Novichok, anthrax or sarin would indeed cross a red line, but as I write, US Defence Secretary Mattis makes no such claim. Even in the ghastly business of war, decisions about least bad solutions are required. But in the current climate of virtuosity posturing, the idea of a rapid resolution with least casualties is not allowed. Are we really to believe that it would be better to flush out the bunkers using grenades over a period of months, with all the consequences for the women and children caught up in the fight? Our politicians appear to have succumbed to over-egged claims reminiscent of Blair's infamous WMD dossier. James Anderson, Wright's Close, South Wanston, Winchester.
And Terry Revel writes, Hotel Praise. Sir, re-go-ahead for Hotel, Chronicle April the 19th. Having travelled extensively across Europe over a number of years, you find these types of hotels wedged into many cities, all built where shops used to be, and all without parking. It means you're in the centre of the city, as here in Winchester, rates are cheaper, and they make a fine base for both tourists and the business community. Well done, the planning officer who approved these plans. And that was from Terry Revel, Meadowcroft Close, Otterbourne.
Get out more, writes Tim Bittleston. Sir, re-police and crime commissioners. Not so long ago you published a letter asking readers if anyone knew what the police and crime commissioner was actually doing. Since then we have seen his bid to take more of the budget for his personal administration rejected, his deputy resign, and now an overwhelming vote of no confidence. For my part, I asked to see his diary for the 160 working days from May the 11th to January the 31st, and can now report to the readers a breakdown of his activities. 129 of those days is seemingly spent stuck in the office on internal meetings. Of the remaining 30, most were spent on awards, ceremonies and conferences. Clearly, our police and crime commissioner sees no value in spending time with victims, support groups, or the general public. No wonder he is so detached. As a suggestion, Mr. Lane, cancel all the internal meetings, close your plush office, and reduce your administration. You can probably hire at least 15 officers on the savings, and without the distraction of the office, you might just get out there and connect. Tim Bittleston, Main Road, Abbotsworthy.
Joan Lynch says, not the town. Sir, I'm 87, was born in Winchester and have lived here all my life. It's so upsetting to see the small shop shutting down, Chronicle, April the 12th. I worked in Jury Street, so remember Wilds for years, and I used to use creative crafts. It's no good the city councillors saying everything is fine. Winchester certainly isn't the town it used to be. Joan Lynch, Linford Way, Week, Winchester.
And Gillian Prince writes, fuss over nothing. Sir, I have read recent letters about political parties taking credit for something with puzzlement. Chronicle Letters, April the 5th. What a fuss about nothing. A far greater threat to democracy is the fact that politicians can make dishonest statements with impunity. The Advertising Standards Authority ensures that advertisements are legal, honest and truthful. There are no such standards for politicians. Last year, just before the general election, I saw a huge poster which stated, "My life would be better and more secure if I voted for a particular candidate." It wasn't on the side of a big red bus, but it made a similar impact. I wrote to the candidate and asked what evidence he had for making the statement, but received no reply. Presumably, there was no evidence. The candidate was duly elected, but I'm still waiting for my future to be better and more secure. I dare say it will be a contest between the promise on the bus and the promise on the poster as to which is fulfilled first. Don't hold your breath. And that's from Gillian Prince, Linway, Kingsworthy.
A burden? Asks Peter Hargreaves. Sir, when the government instituted compulsory freedom of information requests, registered charities were excluded from the right to compulsory replies, on condition that if they were receiving taxpayer funding, then they were still obliged to answer any reasonable requests. However, it seems the Men's Health Charity are determined not to answer reasonable requests regarding the payments they make to their chief executive, Liberal Democrat Councillor Martin Todd, and have continually refused to respond to requests. I made the requests because I have been researching how certain councillors can fulfil their duties to their electors while being members of two councils, in some cases with additional responsibilities, and still occupying demanding full-time positions. Obviously, something has to give somewhere. The flat refusal to respond to questions regarding the salary and other payments they make to Councillor Todd is obviously means it's an embarrassment to them and to Councillor Todd. MP Steve Brine's salary and all his allowances and expenses are available to all his constituents. The Winchester electorate has a right to know the same details regarding Councillor Todd and also to be able to consider if he can justifiably hold down a position of chief executive on a charity and still effectively carry out his duties as a councillor on two councils, plus his many political activities in the Liberal Democrat Party. What are the Men's Health Charity and Councillor Todd determined to hide? Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
L.J. White's letter is headed Southwestern. Sir, a quick correction to the tail end of your article, re the Southwestern Hotel, Latterly House, April 19th. The BBC never owned the building, as until it was sold off as apartments, it was owned by British Railways. Certainly BBC South rented, I think, two floors. Rather ironically, Cunard, which merged with White Star and owned Titanic, also rented office space, including the former ballroom. For several years in the 1960s and 70s, the BR department I worked for maintained the heating plant, which was probably unique as it was manually coal-fired. Was it the last such large boiler house in Southampton? Some years before BR sold the building, a modern gas-fired system was installed. Two abiding memories whilst working there was witnessing the launching of the QE2 in 1967, Cunard management having installed TVs for their personnel to view this momentous occasion. The other was attending to the radiators on the BBC floor and presenter Merrill O'Keefe passing by. That's L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
And David Farthing writes, repaired? Why? Sir, it is always good to see maintenance of our roads taking place. Last week, the County Council's contractors spent 3 days treating the surfaces of the minor side roads in Oliver's Battery. This was of some surprise to many residents, since these minor side roads, some of which are just short cul-de-sacs, carry a negligible amount of traffic and appeared to be in perfectly satisfactory condition with no need of maintenance, not a pothole in sight. At a time of austerity, when councils are struggling to make the best use of limited resources, surely absolute priority should be given to speeding up the repair of the numerous severe and incredibly dangerous potholes still awaiting treatment on many of our heavily trafficked main thoroughfares. This does seem to be a case of lack of imagination and short-term flexibility in switching funding and manpower to where it is most needed. Surely the teams, machinery and materials being used on the unnecessary treatment of Oliver's Battery side roads could, with the minimum of difficulty, be reallocated to the desperately needed pothole repairs, such type of work being not dissimilar to the skills and equipment being used on unnecessary side road surface treatment. And that was from David Farthing, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
On a similar theme, I can't tell you the name of this letter writer, I'm afraid, because I think it's been cut off by mistake. It's headed No Civic Pride. Sir, how can we make Winchester a better place to live in and to visit? The streets of Winchester remind me of the Third World countries I visited decades ago. Cracked pavements with weeds growing through them, paving slabs smashed by lorries driving over them, lying in wait for unsuspecting pedestrians, botched repairs by utility companies, gutters and pavements covered in debris from a lack of cleaning, and roads like a badly knitted jumper held together with potholes. It is shameful.
And I've got another letter by L.J. White, headed on a very different topic, Making It Worse. Sir, read Mr. Webb's letter headlined Badgers and TB, Chronicle April the 12th. Whilst no one wishes for cattle to be infected with TB, I wonder if we're not compounding the situation. When a badger is shot, surely there is presumably, and not to be squeamish, going to be blood and guts on the ground. The body is removed, but what of other animals, seeing a free meal and just trampling in the blood? Whilst not becoming infected themselves, could they become unwilling carriers, spreading it far and wide? The comments about badgers decimating hedgehogs seem doubtful, as they and much other wildlife have coexisted for hundreds or thousands of years until man devastated their territories. I quite agree it is sad to see lambs savaged by dogs with irresponsible owners. Likewise, many humans similarly harmed. Perhaps much stiffer penalties are needed, but first catch the culprits. Certainly, cats catch birds, but most cats live in towns from where much bird life has already been evicted. Whilst I appreciate we need housing, do we plan developments with wildlife in mind? How many trees are sacrificed to be replaced by saplings which need years to grow into bird housing? How many houses have had their gardens made into car parking, which is of no consolation to the hedgehogs? L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
And Roger Malin writes, Living Museum. Sir, what is the objective of those vociferous individuals demanding further exploration of the possibility that more Roman ruins exist under Silver Hill? Surely, during the last 50 years, enough research has been done. It strikes me it is their intention to curtail further development of the city centre because they realise Winchester's position as a tourist destination is fast becoming its only positive asset, and that revealing further ruins and putting them on display would be a good thing. We are told by those who profess to know that the city is evolving. They are right. It is rapidly ceasing to attract shoppers, and instead it now caters for tourists and those pursuing their social lives in its restaurants and cafes. If this is to be the case, it might be a good idea to hand the city centre over to the National Trust as a living museum, perhaps with turnstiles and volunteer guides at the main entry points. We could then develop a new shopping area on the western side of the city for those of us who live here, and with local shoppers removed, there would be then an adequate parking for visitors. All the future growth of Winchester is being forced by the National Park boundary onto the west side of the city. It should be an attractive proposition, especially if a long overdue western bypass is built. No longer would we have to journey to Basingstoke, Eastleigh or Southampton to do our basic shopping. Perhaps the resulting new development could be called Winchester on the Hill. It works at Amersham, so why not here? I'm sure the attraction of the cathedral, museums, revealed Roman ruins, narrow streets and quaint old buildings, together with their attendant restaurants, coffee shops, pubs, fast food outlets and the odd expensive frock shop, should be enough to keep the old town alive. And that was from Roger Malin, Goring Field, Takedown, Winchester.
John Airy writes a letter headed Do-Gooders. Sir, shock, horror, the Labour Party is anti-Semitic. Three-quarters of the population is anti-Semitic, with Momentum bringing this and their atheism to the forefront day after day. The more our successive governments force us to like everyone and their beliefs, the more the electorate will protest. The more we are forced to accept every asylum seeker and potential terrorist, the more we will resist. Multiculturalism will take at least another couple of generations to be fully accepted. It is being forced on us too quickly, on a nation that isn't fully ready yet, with many afraid of losing something that they never really owned in the first place. A result of this is growing numbers of the electorate embracing nationalism, not only here but all across Europe, and as a result, voting for far-right parties. Thanks to idiots like Blair and Merkel with their totally unworkable open-door policies. People need to be educated and listened to more. Brexit is a primary example of a reaction of an overbearing nanny state being more concerned with looking after foreigners than its own people. I voted Brexit, taking for granted we would not be staying in the single market or customs union. And regarding the Irish border, no matter what lip service the relative governments give us, the only ones who will determine the future of that border are the Irish themselves. Spend the billions saved from being in the EU. Stop spending on foreign aid, which rarely reaches the people it's supposed to. And instead spend it on our sick, disabled, armed forces personnel and the elderly. As for the so-called poor, they just need a hand up, not a hand out. The do-gooding PC brigade need to stop bleating on about helping violent, drug-dealing burglars and help the victims instead. If we can jail parents for lesser crimes as their children truanting, surely there must be a case for jailing the parents of terrorists or kids who kill. John Airey, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
S.G. Prince writes another letter about badgers. It's called Badger Boom. Sir, further to Mr. Webb's letter, Chronicle April the 12th, where he suggests that the badger population is on the increase, he's quite right. In the last 30 years, the badger population has increased tenfold. Therefore, irrespective of the plight of farmers, a widespread cull of badgers is urgently needed to bring the population under control and perhaps save the hedgehogs. S.G. Prince, Osland's Lane, Lower Swanwick, Southampton, and there's a picture accompanying this of a really cute badger.
And Robin Thorne writes, Alien System. Sir, Peter Rees, Chronicle Letters, April the 19th, tells us that Labour will abolish the role of Police and Crime Commissioner, P&CC, and cites the lack of confidence our gallant police have in the present incumbent as evidence in their survey. Mr. Lane, with substantial experience of naval budgets, was selected from, one could say, a fairly wide-ranging bunch to stand as the Tory candidate, and because their electoral machine of very hard-working and loyal activists was superior by far to other parties, and certainly to those of the independents, he was shooed into this highly paid post. It should be remembered that this role of P&CC was set up by the then Coalition Home Secretary, Theresa May, in 2012 on the advice of Lord Wasserman, a Canadian who investigated the US system of elected police chiefs. He somewhat later tried to justify his recommendation by misquoting Robert Peel, Home Secretary in 1829, who set up the Bobbies. See his letter to the Times of October the 3rd, 2016, about the police being of the public. We are thus left with a system, I suggest, totally alien to the British sense of division of power, whereby each P&CC declares their political affiliation. Because of that declared political party affiliation, the inevitable result is that their first call is that to their electors rather than to the wider good of the public. Surely a widespread tenet of our life in our country is that blue sky should not only exist, but also be seen to exist between those who make the laws and those who administer them. We do not elect our judges, and we leave the selection of our PM to those close to their candidates and better able to make the selections. I have an email from Steve Brine, October the 1st, 2015, stating, whether or not we have a party candidate doing the job, party politics should not come into policing. The danger is, however, that once you have candidates selected on the party grounds and elected by their party machines, for whatever role, there comes a drift in thinking towards their electors rather than the common good. It is time, surely, for our superb police force to be given leadership, encouragement and support by those who truly understand the very arduous and constitutionally difficult role we ask them to fulfil. And that was from Robin Thorne, Ovington, Alsford.
Geoff Naylor and the letters headed Two Laws. Sir, Theresa May told her cabinet that the use of chemical weapons in Syria showed an erosion of international legal norms. The Prime Minister is obviously referring to legal norms for the powerful and not civil society. There are de facto two moral codes operating in most countries. The law the vast majority has to abide by, and a law that permits the powerful to transcend this law and commit otherwise illegal acts with impunity. There are, of course, many countries in the world with their own codes of behaviour, but all conform more or less to a worldwide standard of basic morality. Well, that is for the common people. So why this second code for the powerful? Historically, the powerful have been adept at modifying the rules that apply to the rest in pursuit of their own interests. They have been able to use the instruments of state to justify to themselves and to their agents the rightfulness of their actions. Nevertheless, it is illogical to have conflicting moral codes. There is an empirical reason why all civil society's moral codes conform to a global pattern. It is because morality is intrinsic in the human makeup, as natural and essential as the air we breathe but cannot see. We depart from its precepts with peril, because morality is balance and justice and is constantly seeking to bring all things into harmony. Its jurisdiction is universal and eternal. Geoff Naylor, Birch Close, Colden Common.
Chris Hall is uninspired. Sir, I agree with previous letters about the monstrosity that is close to completion in Cheswell Street. Winchester City Council has built it without regard to its own planning regulations about overbearing structures and those that are out of keeping, out of context and out of scale with the area's character, especially in a conservation area. The building is stark in appearance and has little architectural merit. It completely dominates the street, it's not sympathetic in design, and it jars with the eclectic mix of building styles spanning that span almost 800 years. Even the Cheswell multi-storey car park has some pitched roofing in an attempt to blend in. The ambience of Cheswell Street has been forever ruined. Therefore, I think that other major developments planned for the city are unlikely to enhance the character or attractiveness of Winchester. In fact, judging by the council's effort in Cheswell Street, I think Winchester will end up looking like many other insipid, bland and nondescript towns in this country. A major step in this decline can be seen at King's Barton, where, assisted by the imminent redirection of the Andover Road through the estate, the new properties are being built in dour, dreary and uninspired styles that can only spoil Winchester. Winchester's a beautiful city, and it is because of, to a large part, the mix of old and not-so-old buildings within it. With major projects planned for Garrison Ground Sports Centre, Station Approach, Cattle Market and Silver Hill, we should be concerned. The artist's impression of planned sports centre pictures a huge block of glass with no attempt made to blend it into its landscape setting. Winchester deserves better than what is currently being erected and being planned. Chris Hall, St Giles Close, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor for this week. Thank you to all of the contributors. And now it's time for your say. With the government considering a ban on plastic straws, we asked readers if they thought it was a good idea. Jane's got the answers.
And there are four readers. The first is John Sorley, 73, Baker from Fair Oak, who said, "I think it's a good idea, but it's absolutely pointless. As an action with it itself, it's meaningless and won't solve the plastic problem. It's merely lip service to grab today's headlines, and it shows." Then Sarah Parkins, 21, student of Stanmore Lane Stanmore, said, "I think it's a good idea because plastic damages the environment, and if straws get into the sea, they can hurt sea creatures and other wildlife." Callum Beckett, 28, manager at Flat White's of Hyde Street, Winchester, said, It's a good thing, and we agree with it. At Flat White's, we use biodegradable straws, and we use stuff that will either be recycled or biodegradable. And Molly Scar, 23, manager of Rawberry and of St Cross Road, Winchester, said, "Good idea. We moved to using paper straws some time ago. They are slightly more expensive, but worth it. It's another step in the right direction."
We're going back to the mists of time now for historical news items from our dusty old files, starting with 25 years ago, and Heather's going to read it.
The first item, printed on Friday, April the 23rd, 1993, is about planning permission. Plans to convert the old Pickford's Depository into offices were opposed at a public inquiry this week by Winchester City Council, which claimed there were already too many vacant offices in the city. Shea Communications Limited were appealing against the City Council's refusal of planning permission for on the St Paul's Hill site. The firm had applied for a change of use of the depository and land at St Paul's Church from storage to business use with additional parking. Steve Opakek, team manager for forward planning for Winchester City Council, said the development conflicted with the Mid-Hampshire Structure Plan and the Winchester Area Local Plan, which sought to restrain development. He said employment development, including offices, would not normally be allowed over 200 square metres, and the proposed site was at least 850 square metres. He said development in the city had continued at a significant level since the adoption of the local plan, and that there was now no shortage of office floor space, both new and used. The building did not have sufficient architectural or historic merit to justify an exception to policy, he claimed, adding that planning permission existed on the site for residential use. And the second item is, Rosie the dog was saved from death after red-faced Winchester magistrates sentenced her to be destroyed by mistake. The four-year-old mongrel was only spared when her owner told the court they got the law wrong. Magistrates had to change the sentence to a fine after realising their gaffe over an order banning the owner from keeping the bitch. "I would have been devastated if they'd destroyed her," said Margaret Schofield, aged 49, of Compton Street, Winchester. "Rosie was born in my house and I've had her since that day. She's like a child to me." Mrs. Schofield, who is studying for a law degree, told stunned magistrates it was not in their power to sentence Rosie to death under the 1969 Dangerous Dogs Act, and the blushing bench had to rescind the death penalty after the clerk of the court leafed through the act and confirmed their mistake.
Now it's going to take us back 50 years now.
Yes, two items from Saturday, April the 27th, 1968. I'd say 1968. Men are to be trained at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, from September to qualify as state registered nurses for the first time. The break from tradition is being made because it is felt that nursing has a place for both sexes in the hospital service and can offer a progressive career structure. The Royal Hampshire claims to be one of the oldest nurse training hospitals in the country. They have been teaching women for over 100 years, and were awarding hospital certificates long before the General Nursing Council statutory register of nurses in 1925. It was in 1868 that one of Florence Nightingale's nurses from St Thomas Hospital, London, was appointed matron and lady superintendent of nurses at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, bringing with her eight trained nurses to form the nucleus of the training school. And the other item is, Winchester Rural District Council at their meeting on Wednesday condemned the Hampshire County Council for cuts in the road maintenance programme, which they felt constituted a danger to the safety of the road-using public. They moved that their views should be put strongly to the County Council and that they should be encouraged to reconsider cuts which could cost lives. Mr J.E. Hatch, who started the discussion, said that where grass cutting and verge trimming were being carried out in the interest of neatness, they could be sacrificed, but when, in rural areas, it became a matter of public safety, they should be continued. Sir William Makins, a member of the County Council defending the Council's actions, explained, We must accept a lower standard of living. If the roads become more dangerous, we must drive more safely than ever. And a member commentates, we must accept a lower standard of dying.
Jane's going to take us back 100 years now.
Which was Saturday, April the 27th, 1918. Two little items here. Firstly, the Queen of the Belgians paid a visit to Winchester Cathedral last Saturday afternoon, attended by the Marquess of Crewe and Earl Curzon of Kedleston. On being shown around, the Queen expressed great interest in the historic details and the architectural beauties of the building. She was much pleased with the Jubilee window to Queen Victoria and inquired if a photograph of it was to be obtained. Her Majesty was herself carrying a hand camera and took several snapshots. And secondly, a fine illustration of what can be done in the way of making Winchester attractive to wounded and other soldiers from overseas has been going on for now several weeks. Each Thursday, a party of 40 convalescents are brought down from the Canadian Hospital at Park Pruitt, Basingstoke, in motor conveyances provided by Messrs Thornycroft. At Winchester, they are met by Mr A.J. Adams of 3 Kingsgate Street, who conducts them around and explains the places of interest in the city. The men have dinner at the YMCA rooms in Hyde Street and leave on the return journey at about 5:30. Mr Adams is one of the vergers at the cathedral, and having to be on duty on Sundays, he has Thursdays as his day off and employs it in his commendable way. He has a pile of letters received from men expressing their gratitude and the pleasant memories they retain of their visit to the old city.
Finally, Heather's going back 200 years.
To Monday, April the 27th, 1818. Late on Saturday night or early on Sunday morning, 4 or 5 pairs of shoes were stolen from the shop of Mr. Jeffries at the corner of Colebrook Street in this city. The shutter on the outside was damaged, a pane of glass broken, and the shoes which hung in the window taken out. It is conjectured the robbers were disturbed, or their depredation might easily have been more extensive. As yet, they have eluded detection. And the second item, Job Stanley and Richard Carter have this week been committed to Bridewell as vagrants, on suspicion of being persons who were in the custody of the Constable of Brook from whom they escaped. The charge against them at Brook was for horse stealing.
So now we're back to the present because Noel's got the editorial comment.
Yes, the headline is The Media Academic and Der Stürmer. A downside of social media is the way that people can express views publicly that they would probably not have done in pre-internet days. Last week, we reported that a Winchester University lecturer, Jane Dipple, who specialises in media and communication, is being investigated over her social media posts regarding Zionism, Israel and Jews. An article from a far-right website called The Daily Stürmer was shared from her account with the headline, BBC to replace male Jew political editor with female Jew. The name of that website is a deliberate and provocative echo of the revolting Nazi newspaper called Der Stürmer. Ms. Dibble obviously had a lot of explaining to do, and on the face of things, it's difficult to see how she can retain her post at an institution that regularly describes itself as values-driven. One of the shocking things is that a person who claims to support the Labour Party can be associated with such extreme right vileness only a generation after millions of British people, including many still alive and well in Winchester, risked their lives to fight Adolf Hitler. There can be absolutely no place for such views in public life in this country. An upside of social media is that it can weed out those people who secretly hold such opinions. But that Winchester is associated with this is appalling and a matter of shame.
First person this week is by Joanna Lewis, and Jane's going to read it.
And it is No Respect for Tradition. It was bad timing. I'd just returned to Winchester after a week on an island in the Andaman Sea off the coast of Thailand. The spa complex had been built in keeping with the surroundings, using local materials to the highest of standards. It was stunningly beautiful, reflecting the natural aesthetics of the area and the times. Upset by Blue Planet 2, staff banned plastics. After staggering around my local supermarket with jet lag and narrowly avoiding reversing the car into my own shopping trolley, I thought how nice it would be to collapse on the sofa and read my favourite newspaper, A Gentle Return to Reality. How wrong could I have been? Front page Chronicle News was the City Council's decision to approve a budget hotel where Next used to be. This was despite objections from the esteemed City of Winchester Trust and some of its own officers. Affordable hotel accommodation is great in principle, but the appearance of what is proposed is a crime against this city. It occupies a prominent position on the high street with a large frontage. Yet what has been approved has all the charm of 1930s crematorium. I was so aghast I wanted to drive into town and make a citizen's arrest. What stopped me was that it was Friday and I probably wouldn't find anywhere to park. Did anyone realise the council had an urban design unit? There's been no design in evidence other than out-of-character oversized dark brick eyesores that allow the developer to cut their costs. Where did they train? An away day to North Korea? Look at Barton Farm and the fields of ugliness. I've lost count of the number of people who can't believe how bad it looks and try not to drive past the site as they find it too depressing. Experts are also appalled. The hugely respected, award-winning Winchester architect Hugh Thomas says they're an example of very poor urban design, reminiscent of the dreary little boxes of the 1960s. The Chesil Care Home, or Lodge as it's been rebranded. The only Lodge aspect is the number of complaints. As residents pointed out from day one, the exterior was totally out of keeping with old Winchester. Opposite, now dwarfed and darkened by the depressing, dull and now dangerous facade. When the sun catches some of the metal, it reflects back on the houses opposite. At least temporary blindness means they can't see the monstrosity for a few minutes. And now we have the 62-bedroom travel lodge. The modest architectural changes proposed by City of Winchester Trust were spot on and common sense. All they asked for was a design that was not bland, flat, ugly and imposing. But it seems that's what the planning department love. It's well known among homeowners here that if you want something approved, you include glass, concrete and steel. If you want something traditional, it'll be rejected. What's also disturbing is how the proposals were passed without being referred to the planning committee. Such a major site on the high street is significant enough to merit the watchful eye of councillors. It's further evidence that Claire Lloyd-Jones's concerns that this is a council led by officers and not democratically elected councillors have never been addressed. And it warns of how Bar End and Silver Hill 2 will turn out if this tyranny continues. There's also a failure to respect a less obvious Winchester tradition. Consider our ancient almshouses and St. Cross Hospital, buildings constructed for the least well-off in society, whom it was deemed deserved the same quality of design as the richest. Winchester needs an urban planning unit with a design brief approved by people who live here and who like living here, fit for a historic city of major heritage importance. With local elections looming, let's ask candidates what they're going to do about it.
Now, Heather's going to read the answers from Question and Answer, My Winchester.
And the interviewee is Eleanor Tobin, aged 23, a fishmonger of Shepherd's Road, Winnall, and she tells us her favourite things about the city. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? Chococo, as it has the best hot chocolate and coffee in town by far. Favourite pub or bar? Oh, the King Alfred. Cosy, with good food, great drink and a welcoming atmosphere. So what's your favourite shop? Comics, Games and Coffee Emporium. The staff are lovely and they have the best comic prices. What's your favourite building? Well, unsurprisingly, the cathedral. It's a cliché, but it's beautiful. Favourite view? From the top of St Catherine's Hill, especially at sunset. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Well, probably the Christmas market. Everyone knows about it, and it's nice to have. Best kept secret? Oh, Winnell Moors. They are beautiful little hidden spots that are particularly breathtaking in the spring. And what's the best thing about Winchester? Walking along the cobblestone paths in summer, walking along the river path and watching the birds roosting. And the worst? Well, surprisingly, not the students, but the dreaded one-way system, mayhem at certain times. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? Student housing standards. We may not need more, but it's not fair to have students living in shared houses that are damp, poorly maintained and ridiculously priced. Describe Winchester in a sentence. Winchester is a place where you can fully immerse yourself in a community of your choosing. There's something for everyone. No matter your political standing or interests, there is a place where everyone can feel accepted. So Winchester, to me, is home.
Now we're going to have an alternative look at the news because Noah's going to read Belgarum Diary.
Yes, and the headline is just one item. The headline is All Aboard the Gin Train. The Watercress line has been running real ale specials for several years. Now it has spotted a gap in the market for gin trains. Fans of the spirit snapped up 250 tickets for the Watercress line's second gin train, with the event selling out in 2 minutes. Following the popularity of the May gin train, which sold out in 10 minutes, the Watercress line decided to host another event in June, which proved even more popular. Sponsored by Fever Tree and in partnership with Winchester Distillery and Pulpul Negro, the railway is hosting this first-time unique experience on Saturday, May the 5th and on Saturday, June the 30th, where gin lovers can enjoy cocktails created with the distillery's Twisted Nose Gin. The excitement doesn't stop there, as guests can also enjoy an array of tantalising, authentic Spanish tapas, followed by a mouth-watering main course from Hampshire's legendary Pulpo Negro, all experienced on board a nostalgic steam train. Woody's Mountford, marketing manager at the Watercress line, said, "The end of 2016 saw a new gin culture emerge, with the popularity of the drink rapidly rising. Millennials absolutely love the drink, and as a gin lover myself, we're really excited we are hosting the gin train here at the Watercress line."
Now here's what's on. Well, there's the Winchester Chamber Music Festival, and this year it runs from Friday the 4th of May to Monday the 7th of May. Full details of all performances you can see online at www.winchesterchambermusic.com. But I now have a preview for you. The Winchester Chamber Music Festival is set to be performed in venues around the city. A series of concerts, masterclasses and discovery sessions will take place from May the 4th to 7th. Now in its 11th year, the festival comprises 9 events plus 1 school concert, all taking place throughout the city. The venues participating will include the Discovery Centre, St John's Church, St Lawrence Church and the Theatre Royal. The festival features the London Bridge Trio with guests including Heath Quartet, Pelléas Ensemble, baritone Ivan Ludlow, musicologist and presenter Richard Wigmore and violinist Mathilde Milwidsky. The artistic directors Kate Gould and Daniel Tong have chosen to feature the music of Mendelssohn in this year's festival, building from a wish to feature Mendelssohn's magnificent octet for the first time in the festival's history. Daniel Tong said, "The octet, written almost unbelievably by a teenager, is one of the best loved in the repertoire for good reason, full of invention and memorable lyricism, but in the end, volcanically exciting." The festival celebrates music by Mendelssohn. His writing for string quartet, quintet, piano trio and song, and also includes a piano trio by his sister Fanny Mendelssohn. Alongside the music of Mendelssohn, Kate and Dan would have chosen to feature other greats such as Beethoven, Mozart, Haydn and Schubert, interspersed by later work by Debussy and Schoenberg. It comes up to the present day with the premier performance of a piano trio by Colin Matthews. Now, if you want tickets, and there's still probably some available, you can get them from the Winchester Theatre Royal box office, and that's at 01962 840440. Tuesday the 15th of May at 2 o'clock, Winchester Talking Newspaper AGM 2018 will be at Littleton Memorial Hall. This is just off the main road, Littleton. The guest speaker will be Councillor Jane Rutter from Winchester City Council. After her input into the meeting, there will be an open chat for everyone involved. It's a good time to actually get to meet some of the volunteers, if you're a listener, and for the volunteers to meet the listeners as well. And if you would like to go, I forgot to say the most important thing, with a chat session afterwards, there'll also be some tea and cakes. And if you'd like to go, could you email or have someone email John Richards, and this is at jprich, that's J-P-R-I-C-H, at tiscali.co.uk, or can you phone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. Lighting up times. On Wednesday the 2nd of May, it ends at... Let's start with now, shall we? We'll start with Friday the 27th of April, and that starts at, that finishes at 5:46 a.m, and it begins at 8:20 p.m. And on Wednesday the 2nd of May, it ends at 5:37 a.m. and begins at 8:29 p.m. If you know someone who's slight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or... if unusually you have a problem with one of the recordings you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Continue with items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And this one... The power and the glory of Winchester mostly consists of photographs, because it refers to Winchester having been the major study of a programme last Saturday on television. And these pictures show the long-lost buildings that stem from the time when Winchester was the most powerful city in the country. The CGI images show Winchester Castle, the Bishop's Palace, and William the Conqueror's Palace. They were shown in Channel 4 programme Britain's Most Historic Towns, Norman Winchester, presented by Professor Alice Roberts on Saturday evening. Almost nothing remains above ground of William's Palace, which was designed to dominate the city and intimidate the Anglo-Saxons. The programme did show a Norman arch in Montezuma's chocolate shop on the High Street, and stepped down into the basement of the Hambledon Boutique on the square. The once mighty castle was captured in the 17th century and razed on the order of Oliver Cromwell. Only the great hall and the round pallet table now survive. The Bishop's Palace also suffered from war, and only part survived to be rebuilt at the home of the Bishop of Winchester, which it remains to this day. And these photographs are, some of them, quite stunning, and just make one realise how incredibly important Winchester was in Norman days. There is the William the Conqueror's Palace, with the High Street running diagonally to the right and the new cathedral on the left. And this was specifically designed to show that he was dominating a conquered people. And then the Bishop's Palace, I believe that was Bishop de Blois originally, when he was one of the most powerful men in the entire country, now known as Wolvesey Castle, and it also shows a picture of the ruins of Wolvesey Castle in 1783. And then the Winchester Castle, a huge castle which dominated the entire area prior to the building of the Great Hall in the 13th century. And this was demolished by Oliver Cromwell after the Civil War, And lastly, a picture of the Great Hall itself, all that we seem to have really now, apart from the cathedral, the only remaining part of the castle, apart from the foundations and a few tunnels you can just about see under the ground. And an extremely interesting programme on how important Winchester was in those days, which we shouldn't forget.
Continuing the same theme, Hunt for Norman Structure resumes. The search for the Winchester's lost medieval abbey resumes this weekend. Community History Group Hyde 900 is inviting anyone who is curious about the city's buried history to get involved. Over the 4 days of the dig, starting today, members of the community will excavate several gardens close to the site of Hyde Abbey, King Alfred the Great's last resting place. The expert archaeologists in charge hope the dig will uncover remains of the cloisters of the church. Up to now, the location of the cloisters has been a matter of guesswork, but Hyde 900 are convinced they are hot on the trail. This year's dig will be exploring three new areas. Early results from probing have revealed clues as to possible buried walls in the gardens of Numbers 10 and 15, King Alfred Terrace. However, eyes will also be on number 14, where spectacular carved pieces of one of the abbey's Norman cloister arches were discovered during last year's dig, attracting international attention. In a continuation of the trench where these astonishing finds were made, the archaeologists are optimistic about unearthing further examples of fine Norman masonry.
And Winchester's history contains things that are not just huge and glamorous like abbeys and things, but a new board tells the story of Weak Pond. A small piece of Winchester history has been in the spotlight. Councillor David McLean, Mayor of Winchester, unveiled a new information board at Weak Pond. He said, "It's lovely to have such a natural place and a haven for wildlife so close to the city. The background trees provide a green screen and give an environment-friendly aspect for drivers coming into Winchester. This board will tell of its history and increase the educational value and impact of this feature." This board was produced in a collaboration between the Conservation Volunteers, TCV, and the Weak Pond Improvement Scheme, WPIS, to inform passers-by of its history. Sited on the Stockbridge Road near to St Matthew's Church, the small pond has been a part of Weak for almost 1,000 years. It was first recorded in 11th century manuscripts and has been used over the centuries by drovers to water their beasts when taking them into Winchester, and by local shepherds with flocks on takedown. Although there are no longer farming requirements, the pond provides a natural green aspect and a haven for wildlife. At the unveiling was Maurice Charrett of Hampton Lane, who almost single-handed battled to preserve and improve the pond. A small team of local volunteers in the WPIS group helped to keep it looking its best and litter-free to enhance the environment. And there are two big pictures. There's a big picture of the board being unveiled, and you can almost see some of the things in the picture, and the unveiling of the new interpretation board last Thursday.
And here we have Time Called on Village Pub Redevelopment. Planners rejected controversial plans which would have seen a former village pub demolished and the site redeveloped, writes Gareth Newnham. Plans by Richard Acton proposed the Woodman Inn in Upham be knocked down to make way for four homes. The scheme included 3 two-bedroomed houses and 1 four-bedroom home on Winchester Road. Despite seeking pre-application advice from the City Council Planning Department, officers failed to recognise that the Woodman was a non-designated heritage asset and, although not in a suitable state to be listed, is deemed of significant cultural value and importance to the street scene that any planning application would have to retain the building. At the planning committee, Councillor Ian Tate quizzed council officers, asking whether this was picked up during the pre-application process. "What has gone wrong in our process here that the pre-application advice has not worked on this occasion?" he said. Head of Development Management Julie Pinnock said, "We have to take it on the chin that we didn't spot it at the pre-application stage, but it is a non-designated heritage asset and we have to proceed on that basis." The plans received 11 letters of support from residents keen to see the site, which is in a poor state of repair, redeveloped. However, Upham Parish Council Chairman David Ash, who spoke against the plans, argued that the Woodman was essential to the distinctive character of the village and that although residents were keen for the site to be improved, most would prefer the building be retained in some form. I would like to see the developers to give serious thought to including a shop. It's the grit in the oyster that makes an interesting scheme, he added. Such calls were echoed by the Upham Shop Action Group, who have been lobbying for a new shop after the Lower Upham Village Stores and Post Office closed 3 years ago. The group, with the backing of the Plunkett Foundation, planned to purchase the old shop and run it as a community venture. However, their plan stalled because they were not able to purchase the shop without the attached house. Glyn Holshaw, speaking on behalf of the group, said, "People in the village are keen for something to be done because the pub has become an eyesore. However, it would be a pity not to grasp a chance to open the shop and create a new community hub. Villages without a shop lose their heart and are in danger of becoming dormitories." Savills Associate Director of Planning, Bryony Starler, speaking for the applicant, said that no heritage matters had been raised during the pre-application process and that a detailed assessment of the site had been conducted. Any more modifications to the Woodman structure could reduce its stability further, bringing to question whether it's worth retaining at all, she said. We carried out extensive marketing of the pub, and there was little or no interest in it continuing to have a commercial use. Councillor Therese Evans said, I think it's unfortunate that it's in such a bad state, so I can understand residents wanting to stop the deterioration of the site, but I support residents and the said parish council who want it saved. I would welcome a redesign to keep the heritage aspect. Councillor Kim Cotleap said, I have every sympathy with the developers, but they need to come up with something viable, and on balance it is a better solution to retain the building. The planning committee voted 8-1 to reject the plan. And then there's a photograph of the rather dejected-looking Woodman Inn at Upham, near Bishop's Waltham, disused for about 2 years. That there is the debate about whether it should be knocked down for new buildings or created into a shop.
Proposal submitted for Trinity Centre. And there's a picture of the Trinity Centre exterior, and on the steps, in the dark, is a little blue sleeping bag with somebody inside it. Plans have been submitted for a £1.5 million extension to a Winchester centre that helps the homeless. As previously reported, the Trinity Centre wants to build 11 bedsits on the garden at the back of the building on Derngate. Director Sue McKenna said the scheme is so important that it could end homelessness in the city. Ms. McKenna said the extension would not be a hostel, as each resident would have their own front door. Homelessness has been increasing in recent years, with an increase nationally of 170% since 2010. The 11 bedsits would allow Trinity to improve its support for people and help them in the long term with their complex needs, as well as 24 hours a day. It will be a home. The night shelter is not a home, it's emergency accommodation, well used and always full up. This will help to solve the housing crisis in Winchester, said Miss McKenna. This could end street homelessness in Winchester. And that's a big statement to make, and there are 20 people sleeping rough. We'd need somewhere to go. The scheme would fill a gap between the emergency provision at the night shelter on Drury Street and places such as Emmaus at Bar End, which offer a permanent home. It would be the first Housing First project in the city. Housing First offers permanent, affordable housing to homeless people and then provides the support and connections they need to keep their housing and avoid a return to homelessness. By addressing people's underlying needs, it aims to prevent the circumstances that lead people to living on the streets. The aim is to complete the scheme by mid-2020, subject to planning permission. £500,000 has already been donated by the Deflog VQ charity bequest, leaving £1 million to be found. Applications are being prepared to various organisations. Deflog VQ Trust was a military charity set up by Brigadier Tom Blythe, whose son Ben was a client of both charities and died in 2010, aged 33. A decision by the City Council is expected in June.
Locals and students spruce up Stanmore Community Garden. A community garden in Winchester has been revamped just as spring finally arrives. The garden was first created 4 years ago as a pilot scheme for the residents at Valley Court, Stanmore. The City Council instigated it with the help of Osborne Property Services and students from Winchester Hub at the University. Last week saw the coming together of the same organisations as well as residents in the Valley area to freshen up the garden with some more features. Sue Green of Valley Court said, "It's been a wonderful opportunity for residents young and old to potter in the garden or just simply enjoy the fresh air." Neil Allison from Osborne Property Services said, "It's good to see that even if folks can't garden, how valuable the community garden is, especially for social activities and health and well-being." Councillor Jamie Scott, the local city councillor, said, "I'm so thankful to everyone who turned up and helped at the recent Spring Action Day at the community garden in Valley Court. We had the weather on our side and managed to achieve a great deal." Valda Stroud, a resident of the Valley, added, "What a beautiful garden created by the coming together of residents, the council, Osborne's and students. Congratulations to you all." The scheme involves students keen to build good relations with local people to ease the ongoing issues. In recent years, many of the family homes on the estate have been converted into homes in multiple occupation, bringing problems with antisocial behaviour, litter and parking. And this is accompanied by two big photographs. One at the start of the day's work, where everyone is sitting around on a patio with cups in their hands, looking very pleased. It's a very mixture of young and old. And then next to it is the coming together at the end of the Spring Action Day, the same group of people standing around looking very pleased with themselves. And of course, the pictures are full of sunlight, so it must have been those 2 days when we had bright sun. And then there's another picture at the bottom of a group of students all in their orange, red-orange T-shirts, preparing a flower bed for planting.
And here we have another positive article about housing. MP visits Winchester's unique housing charity. A Winchester institution has been visited by the City MP Steve Brine. Winchester Working Men's Housing Society welcomed the MP to its full flood base. The society provides 92 homes for low-cost social renting, carrying on the work begun by its founders in 1912. Chief Executive Sally Moja was delighted to show Mr. Brine inside one of the historic houses, which are undergoing refurbishment. Ms. Moja explained that the society lets housing to local people who are unable to afford to suitably house their families by buying a home or by renting from a private landlord at market rents. The Volunteer Management Committee also tasks Ms. Moja to maintain the 82 houses and 10 flats to ensure the society can continue to serve the local community for years to come. Mr. Brine also visited the society for its centenary celebrations in 2012, and Society Chairman Richard Steele said, "We are grateful to have Steve's support and interest for our work. It is a continual challenge to offer the right sort of housing for Winchester people at a truly affordable rent, and we appreciate having a voice in Westminster." Mr. Brine said, "I was delighted to go back and visit the society, but the centenary celebrations in 2012 only seem like yesterday. This is a fantastic scheme, and there's something so perfect about real affordable housing in the heart of one of the most expensive parts of our city."
Silver Cafe. Winchester Cafe 1871 in the Broadway has been awarded silver accreditation from an accessibility scheme in the Winchester area. The Winchester Area Access for All is a scheme that is dedicated to improving general access and wheelchair access conditions for people with physical and sensory impairments in Winchester. The cafe is located in the Guildhall, and Winchester City Council is keen to improve accessibility of all the facilities at the Guildhall. Guildhall manager Chris Smith said, 1871 has always been a community cafe, striving to ensure it remains an open, accessible environment to eat and drink for our cross range of customers. We are proud to receive this award.
Celebrity support. A BBC News presenter has given her backing to plans to create a hospice in Winchester. Sally Taylor, who presents local TV programme South Today, has agreed to be a special ambassador to the hospice. As previously reported, campaigners have launched a £2.5 million scheme to convert Burrell House in the grounds of Royal Hampshire County Hospital into a 10-bed hospice. Winchester currently doesn't have a hospice, so the new facility will allow patients and their families to spend less time travelling to receive care or visit a loved one. The hospice will also host day therapy and outpatient facilities, as well as a hospice at home service, which will support patients who wish to remain in their own home when they are in their last few weeks. It will be run by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which also runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, and the Andover War Memorial Hospital.
And here we have Winchester Vicar set for New Zealand role. A Winchester Vicar is set to become a senior churchman in New Zealand. Reverend David Rowe, priest in charge of Christchurch, has been appointed Dean of the Wellington Cathedral of St Paul. He is already known to several people in the diocese and New Zealand, as he has administered a number of times here over the last 5 years. Bishop of Wellington, Justin Duckworth, said, "David's parish, diocesan and national ministry experience is ideally suited to the cathedral's goals of building community, deepening discipleship, responsible stewardship, generous hospitality and faith in the public place." David has successfully led 8 different churches and communities in rural, urban and city contexts and pioneered mission in schools, universities, communities, families and youth contexts for over 30 years. He has also spoken at national and international gatherings and is an experienced strategy developer, team leader and mentor. David led and managed Lee Abbey, an international retreat and conference centre in Devon, that welcomed 8,000 guests a year with a turnover of £1.5 million and a leadership team of 20. David told the selection panel that he is committed to facilitating a sacred place for worship, hospitality and education at Wellington Cathedral, alongside building a community that will demonstrate the love of Christ by the way we relate to each other and open our doors and reach out to our neighbours. David is married to Pixie, who is a locally licensed minister and a fair trade advocate in the UK. They have served together in churches since they were married in 1982. It is hoped that David will be able to take up the position of Dean of Wellington in July. And there is a photograph of David and his wife Pixie standing in front of a beautiful row of hills, clearly in Winchester rather than New Zealand, but looking very happy about the new appointment.
Hundreds pay respects at senior judge's funeral. A leading community figure who became the United Kingdom's first Muslim judge has died after suffering a heart attack. Judge Kurdish Drabu, 72, who lived in Winchester, was taken to Southampton General Hospital and admitted to the intensive care unit last week, but doctors were unable to save him. He died on Friday and his funeral was held at Southampton Medina Mosque on Saturday, attended by about 400 mourners, and his burial was in Woking in the afternoon. Judge Drabu arrived in England in November 1971 with just £3 in his pocket. But with determination, changed attitudes within the country for the better through his work within the community. He became a leading immigration expert with landmark victories. Throughout his long career, he became one of the most influential and respected Muslims in the United Kingdom. He headed the government-funded Immigrants Advisory Service, became head of the Commission for Racial Equality's Legal and Complaints Department, winning high-profile cases in racial discrimination, and in 1996 made history by becoming the first Muslim judge in the United Kingdom. Judge Tabu was also a former chairman of Southampton Medina Mosque. He was an honorary advisor to the Ministry of Defence. After his appointment, the number of Muslims in the armed forces rose from 25 to nearly 800. His work building bridges between communities earned him a CBE in 2010. In an interview 3 years later, he said, "My inspiration for putting in long hours in the community work is the future of my children and grandchildren and our nation as a whole. I just hope one day we will live in a society where there is a better understanding of each other. That is all I seek, really."
Cash for causes. Community groups in Hampshire are being offered a share of £250,000 by a national company. Builders merchants Jewson are offering funding for building materials to help improve the facilities of community groups. Projects can include anything from a new roof for a village hall to a revamp of changing rooms at a sports club. The money is being offered from Jewson's Building Better Communities initiative. Jewson will give away up to £50,000 to one project, as well as many smaller prizes to other schemes. The company will give £100,000 of the overall prize fund to heroes of the building trade. These heroes are unsung tradespeople who go above and beyond in their local area, or builders who have always supported others but now find themselves in need. Thierry Dufour, managing director at Jewson, said, "Since we launched the Building Better Communities competition in 2015, we've helped more than 65 fantastic projects to make a difference to communities across the UK. We're continuing to ask residents in Hampshire to nominate a cause that could benefit from some extra support."
And the Mayfest returns. Winchester Mayfest returns on Saturday, May the 19th, a celebration of folk music and dancing across the city centre. There will be more than 20 Morris dance teams and 4 Appalachian teams, the American Mountain style. The Mayor, Frank Pearson, will preside over the dance displays outside the cathedral or in the Brook Centre if wet. There will be dancing up and down the high street, St Morris's Covert, the cathedral and Brooks Shopping Centre, together with the Hampshire Youth Folk Ensemble and the Southampton Folk Orchestra, who will play in St Lawrence's Church. The event is free and open to all to watch, listen and participate. And that will be the 19th.
Theatre Window. The Chesil Theatre, Winchester, has installed tertiary glazing to the 3 large Gothic windows facing onto Chesil Street, as the noise of passing traffic often intruded on performances. The existing windows would no doubt have been adequate when the medieval building was built in the 12th century, but now the noise mars theatregoers' enjoyment. The theatre building manager, Peter Lydiard, said, "Well, this new glazing will certainly help decrease noise pollution and also assist energy conservation. It's part of our ongoing schedule to improve the comfort and enjoyment of those experiencing shows at our unique studio venue. We will now look to improving the sound and thermal performance of the medieval door." Chesil Theatre has been the base of Winchester Dramatic Society since the 1960s, when the St Peter's Church became redundant and dangerous, and the Society helped save it from demolition and converted it into a small theatre. And there's a picture of the 3 windows with the double glazing, which shows that, in fact, the appearance of them stays the same, so the improvements have been made without affecting the facade of the theatre.
Farewell to long-serving councillor. Councillors have paid tribute to a long-serving and popular colleague at his last committee. Councillor Ernie Jeffs is shown surrounded by planning committee members, colleagues and officers who made a presentation to him at the end of his last attendance at a city council meeting as a councillor last Thursday. First elected to represent Alresford in 2000, Councillor Jeffs is stepping down at the forthcoming local elections. He has been chairman of the Planning Committee and was the Mayor of Winchester in 2013-14. Councillor Jeffs said, "Being the Mayor was a very enjoyable experience. It's been an honour to serve you all." Councillor Brian Lamming said, "Ernie is a much respected friend to us all. We will miss him." The forthcoming election sees the Lib Dems and Tories defending 7 seats, with one currently held by an independent who is not standing again.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 27th of April 2018. Thank you to our editors, Jane Thomas, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.